Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to today's podcast. We are honored to have two-time Grammy Award-winning jazz musician Diane Schur, also known as Deedles or Deeds, with us today. So we're going to go straight into these questions. Now, Deeds, according to your bio, you were immersed in traditional American jazz music from a very young age. At what point did you decide that you wanted to be a jazz performer?
Well, I've always surrounded myself with music ever since I was like 2 years old. I would be in the closet late at night singing What a Difference a Day Makes, the tune that was done so beautifully by Dinah Washington, and my folks would come out of their bedroom and tell me to shut up, and sure glad I didn't listen to them. But I knew from a very early age, my first professional gig was at the Holiday Inn when I was 10 years old, just turned 10. And the date was January 4th of 1964. That's when my first official professional job happened. So the train's been rolling ever since.
So your mother gave you the nickname Deedles. Where exactly did that originate?
From my mom. She called me Deedle Babe. And then later, as I became a young adult, then it changed to Deedles, Deeds, and other nicknames equivocated with that also.
So according to your bio, you were only three when you learned to play the piano by ear, but your formal study of the piano started at the Washington School for the Blind. Was it difficult to learn pieces that way versus by ear? And did you use Braille music to learn these pieces?
It was relatively easy to do that. I learned, yes, and Braille music, I did do a lot of that. Probably from like age 7 until like age 10 or so, I was very much into fugues, which means like classical music and so on. I didn't stay with it all of my life, but I learned enough about it that it did teach me, you know, like about time signatures and so on. So,
speaking of going to Washington School for the Blind, you actually had to travel by train to get there. What was your experience like traveling by yourself at such a young age?
Well, Lise, I started traveling back and forth by train at the age of 7. And I actually went to the state school starting when I was 4.5 years old. And as far as the train, I remember standing with my parents before the tracks and the reverberations underneath my feet and how loud the train was as it was coming into the station. And of course, I was very homesick once I got on the train and cried a lot. And I remember crying so much that I would fall asleep. And then the next thing I knew, I would be like in the conductor's lap. And he would rock me and try to comfort me, help me out, you know. And it was about a 150-mile journey. And Mama used to pack sandwiches. I remember peanut butter sandwiches, a banana, and some Oreo cookies. that was my lunch. It may not have been the healthiest in the world, but it certainly was comfort food before comfort food became the watchword for how we experience stuff that, you know, at this time of life.
So, of course, you were at Washington School for the Blind, and we know that you know, definitely were learning musical pieces using Braille. But at what age did you begin learning Braille, and do you still use Braille for your work today?
Oh, well, no, I don't use Braille anymore for my work. It's all by ear now. And that's okay. I mean, I learned about stride piano from my teacher. Her name was Mrs. Nadine Lassard, and she was blind as well. And she did teach me Braille music at the age of 7. And then I learned a technique that I still use today as far as the keys are concerned. There's two groups of keys. The first group, you know, in the key of C, being two flats above the note C, and then the G chord, there are three flats or black keys above the white keys, and that's how I learned and still use that to this day when I play piano.
Now, of course, since I work for Wolfner Library, I would be remiss if I didn't ask what books you enjoy reading and in what formats.
Well, may I tell you the history of what I've experienced to this point? Just a minute's history of that. It would be cool because when I first started learning to read, of course, I learned how to read Braille. I actually flunked the first grade because I didn't get it the first year. But after that, I did learn Braille at the state school. And what was really funny is I really got into the Little House books by Laura Ingalls Wilder back in those years. And the house parents would come and check on us and make sure we were asleep. Well, I'd be pretend to be asleep, but I had my book hidden under the covers, and as soon as the lady left, then I would go ahead and start reading again. And of course, I'd be very sleepy sometimes in class the next day. And then I started reading talking books like Reader's Digest, Laughter the Best Medicine, and all of the news that was pertinent during that time. And as far as the formats go, getting into the present day, I use Bard Mobile, and I also use Amazon Audible, which is really fun to be able to use. And I do enjoy keeping up with current news and reading what's going on in our particular time frame. I get a great deal of enjoyment, but I also enjoy reading books like Anne of Green Gables, you know, Lucy Maud Montgomery, and all sorts of different things. I have a very dear friend of mine. Her name's Janice Ian. She's very famous, and I'm reading her book, Society's Child. It's a song that she had written, and she wrote a book about her life, which is great. And I started getting into the technology of computers in April of 1999, and I've been at it ever since. And not only do I read books, I watch movies. I use the word watch with all the latest kind of things like Peacock, Netflix. What's really cool about Netflix is some of their films have audio description, which is really wonderful to be able to know, especially within the silences of the films, what's going on. It's really cool. And I still watch Twilight Zone and on Netflix and Hulu, and I watch the old episodes of Lost in Space on Hulu and just all that stuff. So I'm certainly not at a lack for entertainment at home.
Any particular shows or movies that you would recommend?
Oh, I have such a big collection of films. Keep on Keeping On is a really great documentary on Netflix. And it has audio description. It's the life of Clark Terry, whom I've had the pleasure of working with at places like the Telluride Jazz Festival. Quincy Jones's documentary is really good. But I love the old classic movies. I just got the Manchurian Candidate not too long ago, and I dive back into my catalog of films, and the other day. I was watching Come Back, Little Sheba, which Shirley Booth won for Best Actress. This film was done in 1951. Another film that was done in 1951 starring Patricia Neal and Michael Rennie was The Day the Earth Stood Still. And I would just recommend getting into the, you know, history of film and some of the history of some of the older literature that was done. I love autobiographies and biographies and so on.
So going back to the fact that you are a jazz musician, what is it like being a band leader? What are your responsibilities or things that you may think most people don't realize you do as a band leader?
Well, first of all, you collect a library of different tunes I collect a library of things that I do and have been doing for decades. And actually being a band leader, you do a sound check, which means you make sure that all the monitors are working and all that sort of stuff. And you count off the different tunes that you do. And I have a couple of different bands that I work with, and they get to know my cues pretty well. It's almost a, what would you call it, a psychokinetic kind of a thing. It's pretty cool. And I've always enjoyed being a band leader, and people stay with me for a very long time because they have, hopefully they have a lot of fun doing it.
Has there been any change in the technology over the years of your career?
Yeah, I was, you know, a couple minutes ago, I was alluding to that. There have been huge changes. You know, when I was a little girl, I remember having 78s and having a stereo. If you were going to put a 78 RPM on, you'd have to actually flip the needle over. And there has been a tremendous amount from fax machines and beepers to texting, which I do very well. I've had iPhones since 2012. And of course, I do the Zoom thing. And it really makes it a little bit easier to stay home, especially with the COVID thing that's happening. What's really cool is, since I do have an iPhone, I do Apple Pay for different things, and that's very helpful. And it's been quite a journey doing the technology thing through the years. And some of you may have JAWS for Windows or Window Eyes. I have JAWS for Windows. And of course, JAWS means Job Access with Speech. And I've been doing JAWS since 1999, and I've been interacting with Siri since the 23rd of March, 2012. I have a photographic memory, in case you weren't aware. But I think that some of us who are blind have that. Since we don't have our eyesight, the memory just kind of takes over. And that's a good thing, especially when it comes to memorizing songs and so forth.
Speaking of songs, great segue there. What is your process for writing a song, and what materials or technology do you use?
I don't write songs much. I'm more of an interpreter. But when I learn, as far as doing covers, I will go to Google to get the lyric, and what will happen is the Braille lyrics are transcribed. And I have a Perkins Brailer that I use to be able to do the lyrics, or sometimes the Braille Institute here in our area will actually do a binder or a little book of tunes so that I can learn them. And when I'm in the studio, I read along with the lyric so I don't have to strain the brain. And that's my process of learning, and I've been incorporating that ever since I started recording. So that's my process.
So going into that as kind of part of your preparation, I would probably say, for then going into the recording studio, do you have any other ways that you prepare? And also, do you have any special warm-up techniques that you do?
I do vocal exercises. That's one of the ways that I prepare. I also take the time to be able to go inward and meditate for a few minutes and get real still. And so the thoughts, creativity, and so forth have a little bit of an easier time of getting through.
So what is it like working in a recording studio? Is there any special equipment that you use that's different from what your sighted colleagues use?
No. It's just the same. You know, you sit at the piano and there's a microphone with a windscreen in front of you, and there's an engineer that mixes stuff and so on. So no, it's not really different.
You recently released a new album in May entitled Running on Faith. Could you give us some background on this new record, how long you had been working on it, and maybe different processes for getting it out?
We started the process of gathering material 2 years ago and started doing demos at the recording studio that I eventually recorded. And as far as the musicians and I getting together, that started around September 30th of last year, once all the material was gathered. And the album came out on May 8th on CD, but it was available for streaming in March. And it's so funny because I found out, in fact, I'll demonstrate how I found out. Okay, you ready? Alexa, play the album Running on Faith by Diane Schur.
Running on Faith by Diane Schur on Amazon Music.
Alexa, stop. Now, why I demonstrated that is because I just did that one day in March as a fluke, not knowing that it was ready for streaming. And that's how I found out. So I went ahead and I streamed it on the two Amazon devices that I have, plus my iPhone that I have. So all three of them were going at the same time. It was pretty funny. I was so excited.
Now, was this the first album that you ever had that was streaming, or have you had other albums that were actually put out streaming first?
Yes, there was one other album, the predecessor to this one was I Remember You, that started streaming in 2014. So that was the first, I believe, that started streaming like that. So this is the second.
And now all of our patrons who have Amazon Echo, Alexa, will know exactly how to request. And I'm sorry that I may have prompted your device.
That's all right.
And any other listeners' devices on that end. But now they know how to get your material.
That's right.
Through that avenue. So
that's correct.
If they haven't been prompted already in this podcast, you know, they know where they can go.
Exactly. I gave a demonstration of how to do that. So there you go. That's kind of cool.
You, of course, have alluded to working with different types of bands before. You have performed in a small group as well as big band with 18 musicians and even with a symphony orchestra. What is it like to perform with such diverse groups? And is there one that you might prefer to work with? Not necessarily the group themselves, but just a big group versus a small group. That you would prefer over the other?
No, it would be like comparing apples to oranges. Each of those kind of formats or situations are very unique in their own way. So I derive a lot of enjoyment out of anything from working with a bass player to, you know, working with a symphony orchestra or a big band or anything like that in between. I don't really have a preference.
As a performer, you have traveled the world. What challenges have you faced being a person without sight?
Well, you know, when I'm on an airplane and I'm, you know, watching something and somebody will tap me on the shoulder, it startles me because I don't hear, you know, the person coming. So that's a little bit disconcerting. But sometimes, oh, what does she want to eat today or whatever? And I'm thinking, I'm sitting or standing right here. Can't you just address me in the first person versus the third? Probably a lot of blind people go through that anyway. Some people think that we can't hear very well, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. But other than that, I'm pretty adept since being thrust into an environment at the state school. I've had to adapt to all sorts of different environments, and I'm pretty good at it.
So since you have traveled around the world, have there been any differences that you've noticed in different countries with how people work with you or even different either accessibility challenges or even the opposite, things that you were like, I wish that we had that here in the States?
Some countries that I've been to that shall remain nameless don't have railings to be able to help with accessibility. But I think that most countries, you know, people do the best that they can with what is presented to them and so on. I got to tell you, I do miss traveling. I've got to be honest about that. It's certainly is a different way of working and doing things now.
What would you say are or were some of your favorite places that you have visited, whether that be in the U.S. or across the world?
Well, I love working in California, like in Orange County or different venues. I love working in Italy because they've got such good food. The Netherlands is another wonderful place to work because Shure is actually a Dutch name. It means sheep shed or barn. And I like most places, you know, it's because they all present such interesting vantage points, if you will. It's just very, and of course, being in a place, the most important thing to me is to be able to have good Wi-Fi so I can watch my Twilight Zone episodes or, you know, whatever, text or whatever. That's really important to me.
I cannot agree with you more on that. Wi-Fi is essential.
Yeah, I remember when Wi-Fi was just really getting started, I used to have to carry a router around, you know, with the dongles. And I remember, you know, the dial-in thing, you know, with the modems and all of that kind of stuff, and how we've really advanced a lot as far as the Wi-Fi thing. It's amazing.
It definitely is. Technology has just expanded, and I think will really brought us together. Obviously has brought us together, because there's no way I could have been able to do this with you today if it wasn't mm-hmm. for technology. So I have to ask this. I mean, we've already mentioned you are a 2-time Grammy Award winner. So I think we all want to know what it was like, or what it is like, to be at the Grammys and how you felt winning both of them.
There was no feeling like it in the world to get your name, you know, like Diane Schur, you know, and of course I was crying. And for Diane Schur and the Count Basie Orchestra, I was actually at my hotel, and a very dear friend called me and said, "Deeds, did you know that you won a Grammy?" And I thought, no, I had no idea. So I was in, where was that? I was in Ohio, and I actually did a gig at a club that night called the Major Chord. Joe Williams performed with me that night, which was really fun. He is the late Joe Williams. He's a jazz legend. Yeah, this is something I'll never forget. That's for sure.
Definitely an amazing experience. So on to my second to last question. You currently live by yourself, and you've alluded to this, if not gone into a bit of detail on it. What is your day-to-day life like, and what technology do you use to stay on top of things?
Well, I have smart things, which allows me to work my security system. Living alone, I think it's really important to have that. I don't actually live completely by myself. I have a wonderful kitty. Her name is Puss Puss, and she's a great companion. And I have all the comforts of home. I have a couple microwaves that I use to heat up food that my assistant Owen Cartwright cooks for me, and so on. And I, like I say, I just heat them up. And actually, before you and I got on the phone, I did a 20-minute workout, fat burning workout, with Leslie Sansone on YouTube, which is really great. Kind of gets my juices flowing. Sometimes I'll wake up at like 2 or 3 in the morning and turn on some TV and put on a pot of coffee and decaf. I call it deedle calf. But do that and have a little bite to eat. And then I'll go back to bed for a few hours and then get up. And you know, it's just not as structured now with the conditions that we're living in. But I managed to do okay.
What was life like day to day pre-COVID?
Well, this year it was going to be really busy with a lot of gigs internationally and so on. When I get a gig, I get up and get ready and go to the airport with Owen, or Owie as I call him, and you know, wait at the airport, go through security and so on. And I did gigs, I worked, so that's what it was like. And now all the musical venues are pretty much shut down, so we'll see how long that lasts.
I wanted to see if there maybe was any other topic that you would like to talk about before I go into that last question.
Okay. I have, it's very short and sweet. But all I can suggest to people is get out there and vote with your conscience.
Before we end this podcast, what advice would you give our aspiring young blind musicians today?
Well, what advice I would give is to stay safe. And first of all, keep pursuing your dreams. If you are inspired by music, don't give up on it. There are different platforms that a musician can do through donations and so on to be able to keep making a living and so on. You know, if you're going to get into a recording contract, read the small print. You know, get a good manager. I remember my father, one of the things that he told me a long time ago is let experience be your teacher. And I've always liked that. And for myself, I'm very grateful for what I've been able to do all over the world, everywhere from New Zealand to Russia to China to Japan. Just very, very grateful that I do have a rich history of a lot of wonderful experiences to be able to share. And keep reading. Get as much information as you can. And also keep up with current events. Be informed. For myself, I just try to have an attitude of gratitude.
Well, thank you so much, Deeds, for joining us today and giving us a glimpse into your life. Also, thanks to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you are interested in Wolfner Library providing other podcasts like this, you can contact us at wolfner@sos.mo.gov or call us at 573-751-8720. If you would like to learn more about Deeds and her music, you can visit her website at www.dianescuur.com. And Deeds, any social media that you'd like to plug?
Oh, you can find me on YouTube and on Facebook. And actually, one that's, well, people that are not sighted would have to have Puss Puss described, but it was her first 13th birthday on the 22nd of August, and it's on Facebook. And it was, there was a lot of posts on Facebook after we celebrated Puss Puss's birthday. And also, look up, if you can, Janice Ian's website, IAN. Her first name is JANIS. She has over 200 different versions of a song she wrote called Better Times Will Come. And I did one of the versions myself. Have to scroll down a little bit. It's really worth looking at it. So.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. So yes, follow Deeds on all of her social media and maybe have the opportunity to see Puss Puss as well as Janice Ian. So thanks again to Deeds and everyone listening. Have a great day or night.